Welcome to the Doc Talks Podcast, a conversation on what's new and relevant in the world of Canadian medicine and hospital healthcare. I'm your host, Ian Gillespie, and I'm here to ask the questions and find the answers you need to know. We want to help our listeners know how to prevent and detect illness and how to navigate our healthcare system. Be sure to subscribe to the Doc Talks Podcast to stay up to date on new episodes and follow us on Twitter at St. Joseph's London or visit sjhc.london.on.ca/podcast. Hello, I'm Ian Gillespie. Welcome to the Doc Talks Podcast, brought to you by St. Joseph's Healthcare London. According to Asthma Canada, asthma is the third most common disease in our nation, affecting more than 3.8 million people. And while some of those people are caused a minor nuisance from their asthma symptoms, others can suffer life-threatening asthma attacks. There is no cure for asthma, but there are ways to control the condition. And today, I'm talking to Dr. Constance McKenzie, a respirologist in the Asthma Center at St. Joseph's Healthcare London. Dr. McKenzie's clinical areas of expertise are in occupational lung disease, asthma, and medical toxicology, and her research focuses on the inhaled steroids used in asthma treatment and vaping-associated lung injury. Dr. McKenzie, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure speaking with you.
So, as I noted in the introduction there, asthma, the third most common disease in Canada. Also, I've got a little stat here, more than 300 people diagnosed with asthma almost every day in Canada. So clearly a fairly common disease and one that I'm sure a lot of our listeners would like to know more about. With that in mind, let's start, as we usually do, with the most basic fundamental question. What is asthma?
So asthma is a chronic inflammatory condition that affects the airways of the lung. So if you can imagine your lungs, when you take a breath of air in, the air travels in through your mouth or your nose, and then through a series of passageways or tubes that we call bronchi and bronchioles, which then lead to little tiny air pockets or little balloons called alveoli. It's in these alveolar spaces where the oxygen from the air that we breathe gets transferred to the blood cells and our blood vessels so that it can be circulated around our body for the tissues to use. So you can see that these airways play a really important role in every breath that we take. And because of this, our bodies actually regulate the size and the tone of our airways very carefully. The walls of the bronchi and bronchioles contain smooth muscle. And normally these muscles maintain the airways so that they are open. In people with asthma, there's inflammation of the airway that can cause those smooth muscles to become thickened and hyper-responsive or overly irritable and twitchy when they get exposed to certain triggers. And this causes the airway muscles to contract and narrow the airways, which then limits the movement of air. This is what we call airflow obstruction. Inflammation can also lead to more mucus building up in the airways, and this can further narrow the airways and limit airflow. When the airways are obstructed, it becomes more difficult for the air to move in and out of the lungs, and this leads to that feeling of shortness of breath, chest tightness, wheezing, and cough that people with asthma have.
Right.
And one of the classic symptoms of asthma is that these symptoms may get worse at night, either causing people to wake up with a cough or a wheeze, or even prevent their sleep. And some people may experience all of these symptoms at different times, but for others, they may feel only one of these symptoms more than the others. For example, some people with asthma are aware of wheezing or a whistling sound when they breathe, often together with that feeling of shortness of breath. Whereas for others, their only symptom of asthma might be cough. And so it can be quite variable.
So that's some of the physical aspects of it. And I mean, breathing is so fundamental. I imagine as you're having trouble breathing and so forth, that there are psychological aspects associated with this condition. Can you talk a little bit about that, about the challenges there?
Absolutely. If you can't breathe, it's an extremely stressful emotion, both psychologically, but also physically for your body. And so that sensation of not being able to get a breath in is a very troubling sensation for patients. And so one of the best ways to try and manage those symptoms, of course, are to have access to inhaler medications that can hopefully rapidly open up the airway to help with that sensation of shortness of breath or wheeze or cough. But in addition to this, trying to prevent scenarios where your asthma might get worse can be helpful. even people that are doing all the right things and trying to prevent triggers may still have times when their asthma flares up.
You were talking about some of the psychological aspects of how stressful it is not to be able to breathe. But when someone who doesn't have asthma is around someone who's having an asthma attack, I imagine that the instinct is to tell them, oh, just calm down, take it easy, breathe. But is that really helpful advice?
Well, there is some truth to that, because when people have asthma or airflow limitation, one of the difficulties is actually breathing the air out completely. And so as a result of that, the air builds up inside the lungs. And as the air builds up, that's something called gas trapping and can actually worsen that sensation of feeling short of breath. So if there is a way to slow the breathing and to allow the air to exhale more completely, that can be helpful with that sensation of feeling of shortness of breath. But having said that, if somebody is having bronchoconstriction because they've been exposed to a trigger, one of the important things to try and help that patient is to use their bronchodilator medication or their rescue inhaler, which can help to open up the airways and hopefully relieve those symptoms. But of course, if those symptoms aren't getting better, then that's somebody that would need to present to an emergency department or to a hospital to get higher level care, because asthma exacerbations can be very serious and unfortunately can lead to death if they're very severe.
Do we know, I know we'll talk about risks and so forth. Do we know what causes asthma in the first place?
Well, asthma, like many conditions, is multifactorial. Right. Just like with allergies, we know that people with asthma will often have a predisposition to develop asthma. But a predisposition to asthma is not enough to cause asthma. For the inflammation pathways to be triggered, there needs to be a stimuli that the person is also exposed to. And these stimuli are typically environmental allergens or irritants, which then trigger that inflammatory response within the airway that leads to the bronchoconstriction and the symptoms that people feel. I think most people are familiar with the role that allergies play with asthma. For example, if you're allergic to cats and you live with a cat, this can be a trigger for your asthma to be flared up. But the category of irritants is a little more broad. This can include triggers like chemicals, dust, and fumes. And maybe this is from exposures with hobbies that you're doing or even at the workplace. It can be triggered from smoking or vaping and other inhaled drugs. It can also include our physical environment, like hot, humid air, cold air, temperature changes, or when we exercise, the air we're breathing in doesn't have time to get warmed and humidified before it reaches the airways. So this can also be an irritant to the lung. Of course, we can't forget that infections can be a major trigger for asthma, and this can include viral infections like flu, COVID, RSV, as well as other bacterial infections or pneumonia.
And you touched briefly there on environmental factors, and I guess it was last summer where the forest fires were blanketing much of Ontario with heavy smoke, and that was a terrible situation for many asthma sufferers, right? I guess my question would be, maybe if you talk briefly about that, but are the environmental factors like forest fires, for instance, contributing to an increase in asthma?
Absolutely. Environmental air quality is a big trigger for asthma. And so people that have that predisposition to asthma, if it's a bad air quality day with smog, or for example, this past summer, like you mentioned, when there were a lot of forest fires and the air quality was very poor in many parts of the country, those patients with asthma actually had much more severe symptoms than they would have normally.
Right. How does one go about, obviously you're speaking from the asthma center at St. Joseph's Hospital, but how is it routinely diagnosed?
Well, the first step in diagnosing asthma is really to get a good picture of what the symptoms are that a person is experiencing and seeing if this fits with asthma or if it could maybe be better explained by another condition that could mimic asthma. Then to confirm the diagnosis of asthma, there are a number of pulmonary function or breathing tests that we can do. One of the best and simplest pulmonary function tests to diagnose asthma is something called spirometry. And this is where a person will come into the pulmonary function lab and breathe into a machine called a spirometer. The pattern of airflow that we can document during that test can show if there's limitation or obstruction in the airflow, which is a classic finding of asthma. But we also know that you can have airflow obstruction with other lung conditions like COPD or smoking-related lung disease. And so to help clarify the diagnosis, what will sometimes happen is the patient will be asked to breathe in a bronchodilator medication in the pulmonary function lab, and then the breathing test will be repeated to see if the airflow obstruction or limitation improves. If the bronchodilator reverses the airflow obstruction, this is called a bronchodilator response or reversibility, and this is a classic diagnostic feature of asthma. In some cases, the spirometry and other breathing tests might actually be normal, but this doesn't mean that you don't have asthma. So asthma by nature is actually variable or reversible, meaning that it can come and go. And so if you do a breathing test when somebody is feeling relatively well, that breathing test may be completely normal. And so in those cases, we can use other breathing tests that are more specialized, and these are called bronchoprovocation tests. And these are either the patient is asked to inhale a medication to try and trigger a bronchoconstriction response in the lung, or in some cases, we'll have them exercise on a treadmill to see if that would trigger an asthma-like reaction to help make a diagnosis.
Right. Can we talk a little bit about what other triggers there might be? I mean, we talked about the environment and certain allergies, as you said, like a cat or something, but what else? I'm just looking at my list here, things like, for instance, cold weather or stress. Can you talk a little bit about what other things might trigger an asthma attack?
Yeah, so certainly one of the characteristic features of asthma is that it tends to get worse related to certain triggers. And so common triggers for asthma are allergens. So as we've already mentioned briefly, if someone has environmental allergies, like an allergy to pollen or ragweed or dust or to cats, that can be a trigger for their asthma. And we know that about 75% of people with asthma do have allergies, but not everybody. And so there are other triggers, and this can be physical, environmental triggers like hot, humid air in the summer months or cold air in the winter. Sometimes temperature changes can be a trigger for people. So going in from a hot day into an air-conditioned environment can sometimes be a trigger. And then, as we spoke about briefly, days with poor air quality or smog and forest fire days can be a trigger for asthma symptoms to get worse. For some people, their asthma is triggered specifically by exercise, and they may not have other triggers, but whenever they exercise, they'll find that their asthma symptoms start to develop. And then there's other triggers like smells and scents, perfumes, smoke, and of course, we talked about infections, which can be really important as a reason for people's asthma to flare up.
Well, sort of a daunting list of things that can it worse. What about, I think you mentioned briefly, hereditary factors. Is asthma a genetic condition sometimes?
Yes, there is a heritable or genetic component to asthma. We know that if you have a family history of asthma in a single parent or a sibling, you'll have a 25% chance of also developing asthma. And if you have both parents with asthma, that increases to about 50%. But it's more than just genetics. The environment really plays a big role in developing asthma and how severe the asthma might be. I can share an example with you on how important environment can be. I remember a case very well of a young man that I first met as a teenager, and his asthma was very poorly controlled throughout his childhood. He was in and out of hospital, needing lots of inhalers to try and maintain his symptoms. Then when he finished school, he moved out on his own, and suddenly his asthma almost completely disappeared. And so by changing his home environment, he was no longer exposed to secondhand smoke from other family members and some of the family pets, which, as it turned out, were big triggers for him. And without those triggers, his asthma actually got really much better. And so even though he had that predisposition to asthma, it's the environment that really made a big difference for him.
So I guess as far as treatment, one of the recommendations would be, is it, I guess the patient, the sufferer has to really try to look around them and see what factors might be contributing to the condition.
Yes, absolutely. So the first priority for treating asthma is always trying to identify what are the triggers and how can you avoid them. So awareness about the environment for each specific person is really important. And I've mentioned this before, if you know or you're allergic to something like dust mites or cats, trying to limit those exposures to those allergens can really help to keep your asthma under better control. But there's other things that we can do. So minimizing exposure to other things like smoking, vaping, trying to prevent infections with vaccinations and good hand hygiene, and in some cases, even wearing masks might help to prevent exposures that could trigger your asthma. And then we can start to think about medications for asthma. And so you may have heard of terms programs like rescue and maintenance inhalers. Inhalers or bronchodilators for asthma are really targeting two main things. So one is the bronchoconstriction or the narrowing of the airways. This is where the inhaler is designed to try and open up the airways to help with those symptoms so that the person feels better. This is often what we call a rescue inhaler. But there's another type of inhaler that specifically targets inflammation, and this is what we call a maintenance or controller inhaler. And this is really the mainstay of asthma treatment. So remember how I mentioned that asthma is an inflammatory condition of the airways. And so if you want asthma to be better controlled, you really need to target that inflammation to try and make the airways less hyper-responsive or twitchy. And so inhalers that contain corticosteroids are one of the most effective ways to target that inflammation. And that's really the mainstay of asthma management for many people. Inhaled corticosteroids can reduce airway inflammation, they reduce airway asthma symptoms, reduce exacerbations, improve lung function, and can also prevent airway remodeling, which can occur if the asthma is undertreated or insufficiently treated for a long time.
Right.
There's also some really exciting new treatments that are available for asthma now. And so over the past 10 years or so, we've seen a number of new medications become available for people that have really severe or difficult to control asthma. And these are injectable medications that are also called biologics or monoclonal antibodies that are designed to specifically target certain components of the inflammation pathway that drives asthma. And these biologics have really been a game changer for some people that have had poorly controlled asthma, despite all the other treatments that we've talked about. They can improve their quality of life, reduce their exacerbations, reduce the number of times they're having flare-ups that need to be dealt with in an emergency department or hospital. And so they're really amazing medications for some people. And so it's really an exciting time in asthma management.
Well, again, not to, well, emphasize the negative, but as we started out with, there really is, I mean, that's amazing that these new treatments exist, but there is no known cure. Is that right at this time?
Well, we think of asthma as a chronic disease,
right,
or a chronic condition. And so even with all the controls that you can do, trying to control environment and using medications to suppress inflammation in the airway, we still would consider that people would have a predisposition to having their asthma become more active again at another time in their life. Having said that, with some of these newer medications, there is some talk about maybe being able to put asthma into remission, just like we think about cancer remission, that if you can really target inflammation at that fundamental level, that maybe asthma can just go away for some people, which would be amazing.
And can you talk a little bit about the services that are offered at the St. Joseph's Asthma Center?
Yeah, we're really lucky to have a state-of-the-art asthma center at St. Joseph's Healthcare in London. And it's a collaboration between the respirology and allergy and immunology divisions at the hospital. So when people are referred to the asthma center, we're able to do a very thorough assessment of their breathing and to try and determine what their triggers are and then offer the best possible treatments to each person. So in general, everyone that comes to the asthma center will have full pulmonary function testing done as well as allergy testing and then have the opportunity to be assessed by both a respirologist and an allergist within the first few visits. And so this really allows us to get that multidisciplinary approach to each patient and hopefully provide them with the best possible treatments. One of the things we also try and do with patients that have more severe or difficult to control asthma is try and phenotype them or try and understand what type of inflammation they have, because this can really help us to decide what more advanced types of treatment might help that person. We also have the benefit of having access to some of our colleagues in the ear, nose, and throat division at St. Joseph's Healthcare. And these specialists can help us with patients that have more difficult airway issues, as well as some patients with nasal and sinus issues that can go together with poorly controlled asthma.
And for most people, I mean, do most people develop or notice or initially seek treatment for asthma when they're young? Or is it something that also can develop, say, in midlife?
That's a really great question, because I think we often think about asthma as being a childhood disease that starts in childhood, and sometimes it will get better at some point as a young adult or a teenager and could come back later in life. But asthma can also develop as a new condition in adulthood, and sometimes that's associated with allergy and sometimes it's not. And one of the major categories of asthma that develops in adulthood is occupational asthma. So about 17% of new onset asthma in adults is somehow related to the workplace, meaning that there is some exposure within the workplace that is either making asthma worse if they had asthma before, or they've developed new asthma because of some exposure in their workplace. And so it's really important to identify this subtype of asthma, because as long as a person is exposed to the trigger for their asthma symptoms, they really just can't get better.
Wow. You talked about some of the, maybe I just wanted to touch on, you did mention some of the new treatments that are emerging. Are there any other sort of research initiatives that are looking into other treatments for the future?
Yeah, there's some really exciting things happening at our asthma center in collaboration with the Advanced Imaging Lab at Robarts Research Institute. So we're fortunate to be able to work together with Dr. Grace Paraga and her colleagues, where they're using these new imaging techniques with high-resolution magnetic resonance imaging, or MRIs, to actually visualize the lung in detail that we've never seen before. And it's truly amazing the types of imaging that they're able to do. And it's been extremely helpful to also help understand patients that otherwise have been difficult to characterize or understand why their asthma isn't getting better. And so this is a really amazing collaboration that we have access to through our asthma center, and we're really fortunate to be able to do that.
Wow. Dr. McKenzie, thank you very much. You've been very thorough in talking about asthma, and hopefully some of our listeners will be able to breathe a little easier after listening to this. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this episode of the Doc Talks podcast. Thanks for joining us. And join us next time when we'll continue our conversation on what's new and relevant in the world of Canadian medicine and hospital healthcare. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at St. Joseph's London, or visit sjhc.london.on.ca/podcast. Until then, stay healthy. We'll be right back.